We're holding on Lama Dharma Bays, now third of the way down the Yarmouth by the True Dot, line begins 16 F. We were learning yesterday about the concept where Yisrael has Maaser, Truma, in his possession, and he makes a deal with a Kohen or a Levi that he's lending him money, and then he's going to be selling it to get the debt paid back. So now, in that connection, the Gemara is going to bring a related concept where Yisrael has Truma in his hands and wants to sell it to the Levi, and how that works. Turn it up on Yisrael Shalma Levi, Maaser Yeshul Chabayadi. If Yisrael says to a Levi that I have Maaser that's supposed to belong to you in my possession, but I have Maaser that's supposed to go to you in my possession, in Chushin the Trumas Maaser Shabai. We do not have to be concerned that there may be Trumas Maaser in it, which is also to Zarim to eat. Maaser Rishon is Mutter to Zarim. Maaser Trumas Maaser is not. On the other hand, Maaser Rishon is allowed to Zarim. You have to give it to the Levi, but
Maaser Rishon is what exactly?
It is the tenth that you take out after you take out Truma. You take out
Truma?
No, the tenth, you take out 2%, you take 2% or so of the crop as Truma, right. Then you take out 10% of what's remaining, so a little less than 10% for Maaser Rishon, that goes to the Levi. Out of that, the Levi takes 1/10, so about 1/100th of the original, about 1% of the original, and gives that to the Kohen, and that has the same status as Truma.
The
Levi has to give to the Kohen. That has the same status of Truma as Truma, it's called Truma's Maaser. It has the same status of Truma in that for Zora is not allowed to eat it. If you eat it by mistake, you have to pay the Kohen, the Keren, and the amount plus a fifth, and so forth. The rest of the Maaser Rishon is allowed for the Levi to eat, and anybody can eat it, actually. It's Chulin. And then you have most years,
the rest, not the
Trumas Maaser, yeah. Four out of every 7 years, you next give another Maaser, which is Maaser Sheni, which we've learned about many times. You take it to your Shalim and you eat it, or you exchange it for money and take the money to your Shalim and eat it. Two out of every 7 years, instead you give Maaser Ani, 1/10 of what remains, so about 9% goes to the Ani, and one out of every 7 years is Shmita, there's a Truma and Maaser. So now the Yisrael says to Levi, Maaser Yeshul Chavayadi, I have Maaser in my possession that's supposed to go to you. In Chushin, the Trumas Maaser Shabbat, we do not have to be concerned about the Trumas Maaser that's in it. What that means, we're going to talk about in a minute, a couple of possibilities what that means. On the other hand, if he says Kur Maaser Yeshul Chavayadi, if he says a specific amount, that I have a Kur of Maaser in my possession that's supposed to go to you, a Kur is a large measure, it's 30 saw. And in modern terms, depending on who you ask, it's anywhere between about 500 and 1,000 pounds. So if he says, for example, I have a Kur of Maaser in my possession, Chushin the Trumas Maaser Shabbat, then we do have to be concerned about the Trumas Maaser that's in it, which would be also for Zorim Tzi.
So Maaser.
So my karma, what does the Braisa mean? Amar Abaye, Hacha karma, it means like this. Yisrael Shamal Levi, Maaser Yesh L'chav Yadi, V'Heilach Domod. Suppose now the Yisrael is saying to the Levi, now I have Maaser, which I separated from my crop, from my produce, which is supposed to go to you. However, I want you to sell it to me. Sell it to me, and that way I'll be able to eat it myself. And here's the money, the halach domov. So we're saying ein chushin shema asar trumas Maaser amochem asar. In that case, we do not have to be concerned that so the Levi agrees to the deal. The Levi says, okay, I'll take the money. We do not have to be concerned that the Levi has made that Maaser into trumas Maaser for other Maaser that he has at home. Namely, again, the Levi is supposed to be taking 1/10 of the Maaser that he received and giving it to the cousin. Now, as we're learning over here, and as we're going to learn in the next Mishnah, conceivably a person may want to have, instead of every time I harvest some produce, or every time that, in the case of a Levi, that I get Maaser, right away then I have to go from that particular pile of grain or whatever and separate out 1/10 or whatever it is. Instead, let me set aside one particular pile or one particular barrel or what have you, and I'll keep on using that. I'll keep on taking out of that Maaser or Trumas Maaser as I need it. I'll designate basically that pile is going to be designated that out of it I will be taking my Truma or my Maaser or my Trumas Maaser or whatever for as long as I need to until it's used up. So now, in this case, conceivably, the Levi, when he's acquired this pile of Maaser, he might well have 10 piles of that size at home, or 9 piles, rather, and therefore he wants to designate this one as Trumas Maaser, as the part that he's going to be giving to the Kohen. You don't have to worry about that. You, the Yisrael, do not have to worry about that, and you will be allowed to eat it.
What would be the problem?
The problem would be that if he had declared it Trumas Maaser, it would be also to resort to eat. That's the problem for the Yisrael. He's trying to sell it to the Levi. If the Levi goes and makes it Terumas Ma'aser, it'll be also for him to eat. We're saying if there wasn't a specific amount mentioned, this is how Abaye is explaining the Braise, if he didn't mention a specific amount, he just said generically, I have Ma'aser in my possession, which is supposed to go to you, we don't worry that he made it Terumas Ma'aser. Because he doesn't know how much there is, basically. Well, so actually, it's not so much that he doesn't know how much there is. Rashi says it's like this. Because, in this case, since there hasn't been Mashiach yet, now, yes, it is, according to Rashi, it is talking about it is in the Yisrael's possession. It is in his Rishus. However, he has not yet made a Kinyan on it, because it's not really his, the Yisrael has not really made a Kinyan on it yet at that point. Really, once he separated out, it belongs to the Levi. How it belongs to the Levi, there's various... Well, so that's what we talked about yesterday, the various possibilities. One of them is it can be Makore Logia, that this Levi is his friend, who he always gives it to. So therefore, as we said yesterday, either Rashi, I mentioned yesterday, Rashi says that the reason why Makire Korna and Levia works is because all the other Levi and Makarenim give up on it. They're all Miyayish from it. So therefore, kind of by default, it belongs to this Levi. I didn't have a chance to mention yesterday, but there's various other explanations among Rishonim how Makore Korna and Levia works also. Another explanation Tosfos gives in Bava Basra, where it also talks about this. Tosfos says that a matter of, really, when you get down to it, the Ma'aser or the Truma doesn't belong to the Yisrael anyway. He's supposed to go to the Kohenim or to the Levim. What does he have? What rights does he have in it? He has a right called Tova Hanah. He has a right to say, you know what? I decide that I'm going to give this Truma to this particular Kohen or this one. Called Tova Hanah. He has the right to determine which Kohen or which Levi is going to benefit from it. It's like sort of going to owe him one for the fact that he did him the favor and gave it to him as opposed to some other Kohen. That Tova Hanah is a very small, monetarily, it's worth a very small amount. Now, there's a Gemara, I believe also in Bava Basra, maybe in Bava Nasiya, I don't remember, that says that if a person promises to give somebody else matana mu'etes, a small gift, then he's obligated to. If he tells him matana meruba, if he tells him I'm going to give you a large present, then he can change his mind on it, because the other guy never had any smichus daf. The guy said he's going to give me $1,000. Really, is he going to? You know, he was probably just kidding. Machine can be said, I'm going to give you $10, you know, that's something that's...
So when you go to a second story call, you don't say Matana Moetes.
When what?
When you call for an aliyah.
When you call for an aliyah, that's Matana Moetes. First of all, that's Hekdesh, that's a whole different matter, we're not talking about that. We're talking about if Reuven says to Shimon, I'm going to give you $10, that would be considered Matana Moetes, he's obligated in it. At the very least, there's a lack of a chisorin emuna. Maybe not technically, may not be. You can't maybe take him to Beis Din for the $10. But at least there's a lack of emuna. There's a lack of trustworthiness if he does it. Yeah, but if he says $1,000, then already that's much matana meruba. You can't. Right? Yeah. Well, maybe it depends who he is. Fine, but also okay. Whatever. So not ten or a thousand. Whatever you can imagine. But the point is, the tova sanah that's in connection with the turmo maitre is a small thing. Therefore, if he says that if Makore Levia, if this Levi is the one he always gives his ma'aser to, effectively what he's saying is, I'm foregoing that Tovah Hanah in your favor. I'm going to always give my ma'aser to you. Therefore, we can hold him to that. And therefore, we can consider the Levi as coming out on that basis. Anyway, returning over here.
As soon as he has separated them, does he have to give it to the Kohen and the Levi?
No, he doesn't have to right away, but he can stay in his home for a while, yeah. Actually, until the time of the ma'aser. But whenever it is, at some point he does have to give it. But anyway, so over here, what happens is, so on the one hand, Rashi learns it is on the Yisrael's property, but the Yisrael has not made a Kinyan in it, because after he separated out of Ma'aser, it's supposed to go to Levi. The Levi has not yet made a Kinyan on it either, because money exchanged hands, but money doesn't create a Kinyan, only Mashiach does. Therefore, in principle, then the Gemara is assuming that the Levi would be able to change his mind and say, you know what, I don't want to. I want to make this Ma'aser that you're selling me. This Ma'aser that I'm selling you. This Ma'aser in principle belongs to me. I'm selling it to you. I change my mind. Instead of selling it to you, I want to use it as Terumas Ma'aser on behalf of produce that I have at home. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos says that actually the issue is rather not that he might make a Terumas Ma'aser after money had changed hands. There's no reason to assume that, but rather before the money had ever changed hands, when the Levi knows that this Ma'aser is already waiting for him in the Yisrael's house. At that point, he may have said, you know what, I want to make a Terumas Ma'aser on behalf of other produce that I have. And again, if the Yisrael were now to make this deal with the Levi, he wouldn't realize that, and he'd end up eating Terumas Ma'aser, which is also.
So This is therefore implying that after he gave him the money, it's too late.
Well, basically, because that's what I was going to say, ultimately, we're not talking about a Russia who's going to take money and then turn around and say, you know what, yeah, I have the money, but tough luck, I'm still making this unavailable to you.
Is this a no deal?
Yeah, that's it.
So why does the lady think that he has a...
No, so that's the thing. So if he didn't mention a specific amount, then we don't have to worry about all this.
If he did it,
before
the wife, not the lady.
No, but according to Francesus, we'd still have to say that we're talking about Makiri Levia or any of the other possibilities that we mentioned before.
That's enough.
Yeah, Makiri Levia, or we said Anamar Aleph, we said Osu Shein Ezefa Kizecha, or whatever, yeah. And then there's a third possibility that Ramban talks about that we're actually not talking about. It's in the Yisrael's property. The Yisrael has never made a kinyan on it because it's not on his property. It's not in his chotzer. If it were, then yes, he would have been playing it, and there's no possibility of leaving. If not, that's how the Ramban learns. Rashi learns that it is in his property. There, the Ramban learns it's not. It's in a warehouse or something. It's in a third-party warehouse. Anyway, so... Therefore, so if it's just a generic statement that you have Meiser, I have Meiser in my possession, which actually belongs to you, and I want to here's the money for it, I want to buy it from you, then you don't have to worry that the Levi has made a Trumas Meiser and that you're not going to be allowed to eat it, according to any of these three possibilities of how the Levi could have done that.
How would the Levi make Trumas Meiser?
That's what we said. The Levi could conceivably say that I know that I have Meiser waiting for me in such and such a place, therefore I'm going to declare it. I'm going to use that as Trumas Meiser for 9 bushels of that size that I have back home.
And he doesn't have to make that declaration in front of the Israel.
No, he wouldn't have to make it in front of the Israel. That's the point. Well, wait. But that's what we said. That's what we're talking about. That's the point. That's why we were saying that we're talking about Makiri Levia. That one possibility is we're talking about where he always gives his Meiser to this lady. So there's already a known thing that he gives it. Yeah. On the other hand, if he says Kur Meiser Yesh L'Chabiyadu V'Helach Zomav, on the other hand, if he says I have a Kur, a specific amount of Meiser that's in my possession, V'Helach Zomav, and here's the money for it, then Choshen Shemaser Tzurmas Meiser Amakamacha, then we do have to be concerned that the Levi may have decided to use it as Tzurmas Meiser, again, according to Rashi, after money changed hands, according to Tosfos beforehand.
Because he
said a specific amount. So now the Levi knows, okay, there's a Kur waiting for me. Fine, I have 9 Kurim at home, I'll use this as Tzurmas Meiser, and that way I can eat the rest of the 9 Kurim that I have at home. Says alter but a sheaskin, and what do we think we're talking about? Rishoyim over here, the shakli dama yomashvelet trumas meiser, that they take money and then they declare it trumas meiser. According to Rashi, the point of the Gemara's question is what makes us think that the Levi would do such a thing, that he'd take money from the Yisrael and then turn around and say, ha ha, tough luck, I have the money and I'm going to make it trumas meiser and you're not going to be able to benefit from it.
So the Yisrael lost everything.
You don't do this. We don't assume that the Levi would be that kind of person. According to Tosfos, it's rather the other way around. Would we think that the Levi over here is a Rasha, that he would say for something that I've already declared trumas meiser, that already is off limits to you, Yisrael, I'm going to now go and take money from you pretending that I didn't?
No,
we have to rather explain the Braita as follows. Yisrael Shamal ben Levi, Maisel Avicha B'Yabi. Suppose that Yisrael says to the Levi, not that the Maisel that's in my possession was meant originally to go to you. It was meant to go to your father. During your father's lifetime, when he was alive, he's now passed away, I informed him that I have Meiser waiting for him. Again, your father was Makiri Levia, he was a friend of mine. I always gave him my Meiser, so he knew that it's going to be for him and not, everybody knew it's going to be for him and not for anybody else. And now, V'Helach Domov, and now he says, here I want to buy it off you. Then you don't have to worry. The Yisrael wants to buy it off the lady, yeah. No, Listen. The Levi is supposed to be getting the produce. Instead, the Yisrael says, I want to keep the produce, I'll give you the value of it. Now, it is true, there is a mitzvah that you do have to give Truma to the Kohen and Meiser to the Levi, the actual physical thing, so how does that work? So in fact, the Maharam Shefer, the notes on Maharam Shefer, whatever, want to say that in fact, okay, in this case, the Yisrael really shouldn't be doing this. He's really not being the Kohen in the midst of giving the Meiser, but nevertheless, okay, you know, he's not the Kohen, so he's not actually giving it over to the Levi.
What kind of
Meiser
is he doing?
He's not, he gave Meiser. He's accomplished that his fruit is not terrible, at least. He hasn't accomplished the mitzvah of actually giving it to the Levi. Other Achronim talk about that since he's Mizakeh to him, it can be considered that he actually gave it to him. Anyway, so So we say this was supposed to be to your father, then we don't have to worry that his father, Shema Asai, Aviv Trumas Maisar Mokamacham. We don't have to worry that his father might have made this produce Trumas Maisar for something else. On the other hand, Kur Maisar Lavi Chabiyadi, Behelach Tamav, Choshit Shema Asai, Aviv Trumas Maisar Mokamacham. On the other hand, if he says a specific amount, then maybe the father did do that. Now here, it's not a matter of Bereshiyah Skinim. The father had no reason to think that the Yisrael was going to want to do this kind of deal. As far as the father knew, the Yisrael is just going to give it, is just going to end up taking this pile of grain, which is supposed to be Meiser, and give it to him. So in that case, the father would have had the ability to make a trip of Meiser on behalf of other produce at home. He didn't know that the Yisrael was afterwards going to want to make this kind of deal as far as buying it back, basically. So therefore, the father's not a Rasha for doing that. But nor is the son, because the son is not the one who made a trip of Meiser. So that avoids the whole issue. Tosfos points out, in the case of if you're saying the Meiser belongs to your father, there's no real reason to say that on the face of it, there's no real reason to say that the Yisrael is trying to buy it off him. It's still, you'd still have the same issue, really, whether the Yisrael wants to buy it off him or not, to know whether it's Trumas Meiser or not.
Why?
Because you still have the issue. If the father had declared it's Trumas Meiser, then it'll be Trumas Meiser. And you have to know that. You have to know that Zorim can't eat it. So Tosfos talks about because the father, if he made it Trumas Meiser, would have been expected to tell the son. However, if he had arranged if some kind of business deal like this had been made, the father might have told the son, but the son might not have paid attention, so it doesn't directly affect him. Other Mepharshim say that, okay, the Gemara is just mentioning Halach Domov, because in the previous case we had Halach Domov, so it's just a continuation. But, yeah. Okay. However, the problem with that is the problem with this explanation that we're talking about, that this pile of grain, which is Meiser, may have been declared by the father, the father of the Levi that you're talking to now. He may have declared a Trumas Meiser on behalf of produce at home. The problem with that is, then you're saying the Trumas Meiser is here, and the rest of the Meiser is here. They're in two different places. Do we suspect that chaverim, meaning tamer chachamim, are going, or people who are careful in trumas and nisrus, are going to take truma from something that's not mukaf. Mukaf, Rashi says, means next to each other. Meaning, by rights, when you take truma, it's supposed to be that everything is together in one place. It's all connected or all touching, whatever. And you take 1/10, you take 2% of it as truma and 10% as nicer, etc. Not that you're. It's not supposed to be this kind of thing where you have produce over here and you're declaring. And it's not. And, well, you can have two piles adjacent to each other, whatever. Maybe they don't have to be necessarily touching. And actually, the Rambam says mukaf means they have to be like in the same enclosure or whatever. Whatever it is, the point is, it's certainly not where you have one pile in one person's house and the other one in your house two blocks away. How do we suspect that chaverim, and Tosfos points out that to begin with, you're only supposed to give truma and meiser to kohenim and levim who are chaverim. You're really not supposed to give it to kohenim and levim who are amearim. So therefore, we should assume that this Levi, the father, was a chaver. Why are we suspecting then that he would have taken that he would have taken this pile and declared it Shlomos Meiser on behalf of other produce someplace else, which you're not supposed to do that? Why Bechlal, the reason why you're not supposed to take Minam Mukaf, Rashi and Tosfos disagree over here. Rashi says it's basically Dirabanan. You don't want to allow a person to take Truma and Meiser from not Mukaf, from what's not adjacent, because what happens if it's spoiled, for example? What happens? You said that this pile is going to be Trumas Meiser on behalf of what's at home. You go and eat what's at home, and then you come and find out that the pile that you had planned to use is spoiled or lost or stolen or what have you. Tosfos says that actually no. Tosfos says it's a gzeirat hakasuv. We learn it from a pasuk. That's not allowed to do that. Anyway, so that explanation doesn't work either. There's no reason we should assume that the father would have done such a thing. Elo Amar Rav Ashi, Hachakam. No, let's try a third explanation of the Braisa. Ben Yisrael Sha'amal Levi. If the Yisrael says to the Levi, Kach Amali Abba, my father told me, Maisa L'chabi Yadi, that there's Maisa waiting for you in my possession. So my father died. Before he died, he said that there's Maisa waiting for you. Oi, or he says, Kur Maisa L'chabi Yadi, or he says, or he says that in my possession there is Maisa that was supposed to go to your father. So either way, the Yisrael is not the original owner of the produce. The Yisrael is the second generation. So he's saying, my father told me that this Maisa is waiting for you or for your father, as the case may be. then choshishin the trumas meiser shibay. We do have to be concerned about the trumas meiser. What does that mean? Not like we were saying before. We were saying choshin the trumas meiser shibay or ain choshin would mean that the Yisrael means that the Yisrael who has the grain in his possession, does he have to be concerned that this, instead of being meiser rishon, which would be allowed to be eaten by a zar, and therefore he could buy it off the Levi and eat it, do we have to be concerned that it might be trumas meiser which would be also for him to eat? Now Rav Ashi is explaining differently. The Levi is the one who we're saying has to be concerned or doesn't have to be concerned about the Trumas Meiser. Namely, if the like this, the Yisrael is telling him, my father left this Meiser over before he passed away, and it's supposed to go to you. If there wasn't a specific amount mentioned, if he just said Meiser l'chaviyadi or Meiser l'lavi chaviyadi, then the Levi has to be concerned. He has to make sure to take Trumas Meiser out of it. Because we can't assume, since the father didn't mention an amount, he himself may not know how much there was there. So he himself may not have gotten around to measuring it and taking off Trumas Meiser. Therefore, the Levi, when Choshish, the Levi has to be concerned, wait a minute, this pile of grain has to have Trumas Meiser taken out of it before I can accept money from the Yisrael on behalf of it.
Because the father didn't necessarily
take Trumas Meiser from before.
Yeah. And the reason why we think he didn't take Trumas,
because there's not a specific amount mentioned. On the other hand, Kor Meiser v'chabiyadi, on the other hand, if the son Yisrael, the Gemara says, because kibin d'loitchi, since there's not a fixed amount, since the father didn't specify an amount, lo yhav mesak and lay balabais. So the balabais, the father, may not have been mesakin, and he himself may not have taken Trumas Meiser ahead of time. Therefore, the Levi has to know, forget about deals with Halach Domov that we were mentioning. But I said something to Halach Domov. We were inserting that to try and explain it. Now Rav Ashi said, never mind Halach Domov. The Yisrael was saying to the Levi, there's a pile of grain in my property that's Trumas, that's Meiser, which you're supposed to be taking. Come pick it up. The Levi has to be, if he doesn't mention a specific amount, the Levi has to say to himself, wait a minute, before I'm allowed to eat that Meiser, I have to take off Trumas Meiser and give it to the Kohen. Because the father may not have done that. On the other hand, Kur Meiser l'chabiyadi, Kur Meiser l'avi chabiyadi, on the other hand, if the son, the Yisrael, mentions a specific amount, my father left me a Kur of Meiser, for you or for your father, in Choshen the Trumas Meiser, then the Levi does not have to worry about the Trumas Meiser, he can assume that Trumas Meiser has been taken. Given the kid, because since a specific amount has been mentioned, Takuni Takne Balabais. We can assume that the Balabais, the father, will have taken out the Trumas Meiser before he passed away. Because in general, we have an assumption, Chazaka, a Chover, there's a Chazaka, that a Chover does not leave something undone.
So if
he didn't say Kor, that he himself didn't know the amount, you have to measure it before you know how much Trumas Meiser to take. But like this, once he measured it, we can assume he already took care of the Trumas Meiser.
That presupposes he measured it.
Right.
And therefore that he took Trumas Meiser.
Right. Therefore that he will have taken out Trumas Meiser. Yeah. The Rambam actually has a Girsa the other way around. The Rambam has a Girsa. For the problem with the way we have the Girsa over here, which is Rashi's Girsa, is that it comes out, Rav Ashi is flipping around the what it said in the Braisa. The Braisa had said that if there's not an amount mentioned, ain choshed in the Trumas Meiser Shaboy, and if there's an amount mentioned, then choshed.
Right.
Here Rav Ashi is flipping it around and saying no amount, then choshed. And if there is an amount, then ain choshin.
And the reason for that is?
Because that's how we explain the Gemara, that choshin or ain choshin, we're changing the meaning of the word choshin and ain choshin, not that the Yisrael have to worry about, is this Trumas Meiser and I'm not allowed to eat it, but does the Levi have to worry about taking out Trumas Meiser before he eats it? So the Rambam explains differently, and he apparently has a different gears over here, where the vote is that choshin and ain choshin still amount to they still have basically the same meaning as they did before.
So
it comes out therefore. So if there's no amount mentioned, then the father may not have been misacking it. He may not have taken Trumas Meiser, and therefore the Yisrael has to know before he sells it. Wait, there's Trumas Meiser in there. I have to take that into consideration. As opposed to otherwise, if there was an amount mentioned, he knows his father will have already taken care of it. Or the other way. If there's no amount mentioned, there's still Trumas Meiser in there, and I still have to know when I buy it off the Levi, I will have to know that I can't eat all of it. As opposed to the second way, then we say that there's no problem with that. So the Trumas Meiser will have already been separated out, and whatever's left is pure Meiser.
If there's an amount mentioned.
Yes, basically. Not the whole thing.
Right.
Okay. Right, so, yeah. Indeed. Okay. So now the question is, who says the Bala Bais has the right to give Trumas Ma'aser in the first place? The Ma'aser belongs to the Levi. So how does the Levi is the one who's supposed to be taking out the Trumas Ma'aser and giving it to the Kohen? How does the Yisrael, the original owner of the produce, have the right to take out the Trumas Ma'aser without the Levi's consent? The answer is ain't. Yes, as a matter of fact, Abba Elazar ben Gamla. That would go according to the statement of Abba Elazar ben Gamla. Netanya, Abba Elazar ben Gamla. The pasuk says, "V'nechshav lachem trumaschem." Your truma will be fought for you, will be counted for you. This is talking about trumas ma'aser. That's when Levim give their truma, meaning their trumas ma'aser, will be considered. Wait. The state truma sakas medaber. The pasuk is talking about two different kinds of truma. Trumaschem means truma gdoila, the big truma that the Yisrael gives out of the original crop, the 2%, as well as the trumas ma'aser, the 10% of the ma'aser isher that the Levi gives to the kohen.
Of the 2%.
Out of the 10%. 2% goes directly from the Yisrael to the kohen. That's truma gdoila.
Truma gdoila.
10% or a little less than 10% goes to the Levi. Out of that. From the rest of the crop.
From
98%. From 98%, yeah. Out of that, the Levi takes 10% of that, so a little less than 1% of the original and gives that to the Kohen. Now, when the Pasuk says, V'nechshav lachem trumaschem, when speaking to the Levim, and saying, when you give your truma, it'll be considered like truma gdola, that the Pasuk is talking about two kinds of truma. But nevertheless, that's true. Yeah, but... Nevertheless, you can't be totem shalomi das. You can't give truma from somebody's produce without their das. Atem, just like you give truma with das, so your shliach can only give it with your das.
Well, that's
ridiculous. 2%
of the...
You gotta give
any. Fine, but that's still, you can't do it without his rishus.
2% of the 100 goes to
the kohen. 10%, 9.8%, whatever, goes to the lady.
10% of the 98%
goes to the lady. Out of that,
out of what then?
Out of that 9.8%, 10% of that, so 0.98% also goes to the kohen.
The lady to the kohen.
Now, when the pasuk says "V'nechshav lachem trumaschem," that you, when you Levim give truma, it'll be considered like just like the truma gdola. V'shtei truma sakasim adaber. The pasuk is talking about two kinds of truma. Achas truma gdola, achas truma smaiser. One is the truma gdola, the 2%, and one is the truma smaiser, the 0.98%. Which, therefore, we're making a hekesh between them. Kesheim shetrumah gdola netelos ba'omer of machshava, just as trumah gdola is given by an approximation, this that the Chachamim said, you give 1/40th if you're generous, 1/50th if you're average, 1/60th if you're stingy, it's not meant to be that you measure it and give an exact 1/40th, 50th, or 60th. You're supposed to estimate it.
Say, it could be a grain of rice?
So, midarais chitachas pateres sakri, yes. Midarais, you can give 1 grain. Midrabbanan, there are amounts, 1/40th, 1/50th, 1/60th. The Yerushalmi actually learned it from Sukkim in Yechezkel. But anyway, the person, when he's giving that amount, is supposed to estimate it. He's not supposed to measure it and then actually take out. So Tosfos says the reason for it is because since you have to estimate it, means therefore you're probably going to end up overestimating because you don't want to cheat the Kohen, and therefore that'll be all for the good. You'll be giving them more, yeah. So therefore, so just like truma gdola is given by Oymed, uva machshava, and it can be given with thought, there is a big discussion among Rashi and Tosfos and various other Rishonim, what we mean over here by thought. Does it mean that you can just think that a certain part of this pile of grain is going to be truma, and that's good enough? Or maybe it means that besides thinking that, you also have to separate it out, but you don't have to actually say this is truma. Or maybe it means you have to think it and say it. This is truma, but you don't necessarily have to actually separate it out. You can just verbally declare that I want this side of it to be truma, whatever it is. Truma smaiser to tell us about Ibn Machshava. So also it is with truma smaiser. Even though truma smaiser, the Torah does say it's supposed to be 1/10, unlike truma where the Torah doesn't give an amount. Same thing. Truma smaiser, Abba Elazar ben Gamla says, also can be given based on estimation and based on Machshava. And just as we make another comparison between truma gdola and truma smaiser, just like the truma gdola is given, the Bala Bais is the one who takes it out, and he's the one who gives it to the kohen. So also the Bala Bais has the right to give the truma smaiser to the kohen as well on behalf of the lady. So there we go. So the Yisrael. So there we go. Then according to that, the Yisrael is able to do that.
So that's, why did the Gemara question that?
That's the Gemara didn't. Well, the truth is, there is actually a lot of Rishonim say that since the Gemara is saying that this is Abba Elazar ben Gamla, implies that the Tosfos discusses it over here, it implies that the Chachamim disagree with him. And that brings, is that necessarily the case? Or is it maybe this Abba Elazar ben Gamla made the statement and nobody disagrees with him?
Yeah.
You could say it either way. And there's also there's a lot of discussion about the details of what he's saying. Is it true, for example, do we accept what he's saying, that Trumas Meiser can be given by estimation, or does it have to be given 10%? The Rambam in that has to be not like him. He says that Trumas Meiser has to be davka 1/10. Then you have to measure it, which implies that the Rambam holds the Chacham and disagree with him on that. On the other hand, the Rambam does paskin, as the Maskana, as the Gemara over here, that the Balabais can give Trumas Meiser. So at least in that, either the Rambam holds the halacha is like him, or that the Chachamim don't disagree with him on that point. Talking further about this matter of separating out Truma and Meiser from something that you set aside ahead of time. So the previous Mishnah talked about that you're able to make an arrangement. You lent money to a Kohen or a Levi or an Oni, and you're able to continue the arrangement to be paid out of Truma or Meiser on the assumption the person is alive. So now this Mishnah is going to deal with the assumption that the produce or the barrel of wine or whatever it is still intact. So the Mishnah says, "Hamaniach peiros liyis mafresh alein truma ma'aser." So if somebody sets aside produce that he's going to be giving out of that truma and ma'aser, so again, like I said before, the idea is, for example, he has many other bushels of grain at home. So he's going to designate one particular bushel that out of it, as he harvests more and more produce, as he gets more and more of it ready, he's going to take out more and more truma from this bushel until it's empty and give it to the kohen. Or the same thing with ma'aser and the rest of them. So what's about minam mokuf? So there's many different explanations. In fact, the Rambam says that our Mishnah is only talking about b'di'evit. But clearly you're not supposed to do that, like we said before. B'di'evit, if the person does it, then you've got to talk about what? Minachodesh aliyashin, that's for sure you're not allowed to do. It all has to be from that year's produce. But so the Rambam says that Taka, you're not allowed to do that. Tosfos discusses over here that, for example, this could be talking about you set it aside to take Truma on Erev Shabbos or Yom Tov. When you don't have time, you have to do it in a hurry because you're not allowed to take Truma on Ma'aser. Yeah. So Tosfos, it's a little more than B'di'evet. It's more like you set it aside to begin with. Ba'arve Shabbos is Yom Tov and Ivy, Tosfos says, that you're allowed on Erev Shabbos or Yom Tov, you're allowed to take Shalom and Amokah. That would be B'di'evet, according to the Rambam, yeah. And there's various other explanations also that maybe, according to Rashi, that the whole thing was only a Gzeira, because what if the part that was supposed to be Truma is spoiled or whatever? So if you have it all in the same general vicinity, okay, not Minamukaf, but at least you know you're keeping track of it.
How far away should it be the Minamukaf?
Minamukaf, according to Rashi, would mean that they're adjacent, some of them. But so you're not supposed to be in two widely separated locations.
What are we talking about?
Okay, but so then we're talking about they're closer together. I don't know, whatever. They're in the same general. They're at two opposite ends of the room, let's say. I don't know. Or Moris Lirs Mahapishal and Maisa Shani, or a person sets aside money that he's going to be using for redeeming Maisa Shani. Would people do that even nowadays? I mean, we have a mitzvah of Trumas and Maisus even nowadays in Eretz Yisrael. So When you buy produce in Eretz Yisrael, it's a very common thing. You don't want to, every time you're going to be mechalo the ma'aser sheni on another prutah, and soon you're going to have a whole pile of them. You take one large coin, for example, and every time you have some ma'aser sheni to be poida, you say I'm being poida this on another prutah's worth of this coin, and eventually the coin becomes completely kedushas ma'aser sheni, and at that point you have to destroy it since we don't have a bris mikdash to take it to Yerushalayim and redeem it and then buy food with it. So here. Mafishalan Bacheska Shane Tayaman, so you can continue using that bushel or that coin or whatever as Truma or Meiser. And you can use the Chazaka that they're still intact. Im Ovdu, now what happens if they get lost, if you actually went to check and you find that they're gone? Different Mephoshim talk about what we mean by gone over here. Does it mean that they're spoiled? Does it mean, in other words, that then there's a possibility that maybe not so long ago they were fresh? And now just it's spoiled, or is it talking about that it's stolen or law or whatever, where it's completely gone, and therefore you don't know how long ago it may have been. So, So Rabbi Elazar says in that case you have to be concerned for a 24-hour period. What 24-hour period we're going to talk about in the Gemara? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and we'll see in the Gemara whether there's a machlokes at this point. Rabbi Yehuda, remember, Shlosha Prokin Vodkin of Hayayim, there's three times during the year when you have to check wine. If you set aside in this kind of way, you set aside one particular barrel of wine that's going to be used as truma for the rest of the barrels in the cellar. So this is also an example. It is Minamukha, if they're all in the same cellar. But you have one particular barrel that you set aside, and that is going to be gradually more and more of it is going to be designated truma until all of it is. Three times a year you have to check it. Three times a year when the weather changes and it's more likely that wine is going to spoil. Bekidum shomotzayachag, you have to check when the east wind is blowing after Sukkot, at the beginning of the fall. Uvaitzas smadar, when the grapevines out in the vineyard are developing smadar, which Rashi says means the flowers, the blossoms have fallen off, and you have the little tiny grapes. They're very tiny at that point, but they're already visible on the grapevine where they're growing. Because at that point, that's during the spring. That's during the spring. It's again when the weather is starting to change, and therefore there's more. Yes, not blossoming, actually. So there are mephoshim who say that smodah means blossoming. You actually learn that's when the blossoms fall off, and you start seeing the little tiny fruit, the little tiny embryonic fruit.
It's the time when
the weather is changing, yeah. Uvashas knistas mayim boiser, and at the time when there's water in the boiser is unripe grapes. So when there's water, when there's moisture in them, to the point where you would be able to take those tiny little unripe grapes and crush them and get some moisture out of them, that's called a soft mine. That happens sometime during the summer. No, there's a later stage of the ripening. The previous one was during the spring. This is during the summer. Rashi gives a second explanation that knisas mayim is that sometimes they would take unripe grapes and they would press them. And they'd mix them with water, and then use it as kind of like a vinegar to do, because at that point sugar hasn't really developed in the grapes yet, so it'd be very, very tart, vinegary, and they could use it as to dip food into.
Like a salad from the
yeah.
Wine.
Yeah. So those three times a year you have to check it. So you must say, my mesles. What mesles? What 24-hour period are we concerned about if you went and found that the produce or the wine or what have you is gone? Rabbi Yochanan Meslas Shabdika, it means 24 hours before you checked. So in other words, you went and checked on Wednesday at noon. You found that the produce is gone. So now you have to be concerned any time during the last 24 hours that you had taken some fruit and said, you know what, I'm going to designate the truma for it and the meiser for it is going to be in this pile. Well, now that pile is gone, and it could have been gone any time during that 24 hours. Therefore, you have to be choshish, and you have to take, just to be on the safe side, you have to take off truma and meiser again on behalf of that fruit that you already that you thought was already taken care of. Rashi says that the in principle that upon could have been machmir more than that, but already they said beyond 24 hours before you can rely on the chazaka.
Someone took it from the crop.
That's the thing. You have different mephoshim that discuss what's the circumstances that we're talking about. If, for example, he comes and finds it spoiled. If he comes and finds it spoiled, for example, then fine, you can estimate how long it would have taken to reach the stage of spoilage. It might have been 24 hours, it might have been 2 days, it might have been 3 days or whatever, and then based on that. So according to that, we would have to be talking about over here where you went and found it was gone. Somebody stole it, let's say.
Why is it the stage of the amount of time for the ripening?
Not ripening, of the rotting, the spoilage, because let's say, because then it wouldn't be a fixed 24 hours, then it would depend on how spoiled it is. You'd have to figure out, okay, it's so spoiled now that it still would have been fresh, you know, 15 hours ago. Well, therefore, anything within the last 15 hours is a problem, but no, as opposed to 24 hours or whatever, yeah. Velozov and Antigna say, Mishumar Velozov, Rabiana. No, it doesn't mean that 24 hours. It means Nesla Shalhan Nacha. No, it actually means that you can only assume that proper truma and meiser was taken out of this pile or barrel or whatever for the first 24 hours after you set it aside. Once you set it aside, for the first 24 hours, we don't know. Anything could have happened from then, from 24 hours after you set it aside, until now when you checked and you found that it's spoiled or gone or whatever. Yeah. Well, it comes out of greater chumrah, according to that. Think of it. I mean, so he set aside this pile of grain, let's say, on Rosh Chodesh Shvat. Rosh Chodesh Shvat at noon. He comes back on Yud Shvat at noon and finds that it's spoiled. According to the first opinion, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it means he only has to worry about from Tes Shvat at noon until Yud Shvat at noon. Anything from Rosh Chodesh until Tes Shvat, he would know is okay. According to the second opinion, it would be the other way around. Only from a Shchodesh Shvat at noon till Beis Shvat at noon do we know it was okay. Anything after that, we have to be choshesh that Truma and Maisa may not have been properly taken because it may have been spoiled or stolen already at that time.
So 8 days would go.
Yeah. For months, whatever, however long it is, whatever, it's the principle.
Whatever.
Okay. So let's look at the Mishnah and see how we can understand it according to both these possibilities. The Mishnah said, Im avdu, if they got lost, again, whether lost means rotted or stolen or whatever, hareza choshesh mesles, and you have to be concerned for a 24-hour period. So, Bishlam and Mandarim Esther, that's Shabbat. If you're saying it means the last 24 hours before you found it gone, okay, then that makes sense. It means that's what the Mishnah is saying. You have to be concerned for Mesles, for a 24-hour period before that.
Every time you check it.
No, the
last check.
The 24 hours before the last check is the Chashash. Anything before that, anything earlier than Tet Shvat, in my scenario, you'd be fine. But if you mean the other way around, that you're definitely good for the first 24 hours till noon on Beit Shvat, and after that is a problem, hi, mesles, what do you mean? You have to be concerned, mesles. Ad mesles, you should say, the Mishnah should have said that you have to be concerned all the way back until the expiration of a mesles. Akasha. It would mean the Mishnah should have said they have to be concerned all the way back to the end of that 24 hours, the first 24 hours.
Kasha is a kasha
on that second opinion. Therefore, in other words, that second opinion doesn't really fit so well with the words of the Mishnah. The second opinion, Rebbe Lazar ben Antignus, would have to change the words of the Mishnah to make it fit his opinion, because otherwise it doesn't fit. Mesles, choshesh, mesles implies that you have to be concerned about what happened during a 24-hour period. Not you have to be concerned about what happened in the last week going back to the end of the 24-hour period. The Mishnah said, Divrei Rebbe Lazar, that, we said Rebbe Lazar had said that you just have to be worried about that mesles. Amar Rabbi Lazar, so Rabbi Lazar, the Amora, Rabbi Lazar ben Tadas, the Amora says, Chalukin ala chaver of Rabbi Lazar. The other Tanoim disagree with Rabbi Lazar, the Tanner, Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua. The Tanan, as we find in Mishnah, Mikvah Shenimdad, if you measure a Mikvah, which is supposed to be minimum of 40 sa, Venimta Chaser, and you find that it's missing, it's not full 40 sa, Kol Tadas Shenasu Agab of Lamafreya, then any tatters that were done based on that something was dipped in the mikveh, so a person dipped in the mikveh, for example, and then touched truma or whatever, or a keli was dipped in the mikveh and then was used to handle truma or whatever, lemafreya, going back, bein rishus yachad, bein rishus rabim, whether in rishus yachad or rishus rabim, Rashi says it means the mikveh is in rishus yachad or rishus rabim, even though, as we've learned in Nazir and other places, suffix truma and rishus rabim usually is tar, in this case, tmeis, in this case, we say they're tarmei.
No.
The reason is because Safek Tuma Rishus Rabim is Tahar, then you're not sure. You have, let's say, a dead sheriff over there, you're not sure whether you touched it or not. That was the case in Metanozir, for example. Here, you know that this person touched the Taras. You don't know whether he became Tahar or not, whether the mikveh was missing from its 40 saw at the time that he dipped in it or not. That already, so you have, on the one hand, the mitzvah had a chazaka of being full. On the other hand, the person had a chazaka of being tummy. Plus, also, you have a reyesa now. You have another negative factor in the fact that now you find the mitzvah is chaser. So because of all of that, the chachamim say, therefore, you have to assume that it was chaser already at the time the guy toveled over there. And so even if the mitzvah is in Rishus Rabim, or other mafarshim say, even if the object that you're worried whether it's tummy or tavor now is in Rishus Rabim, nevertheless, in itself, we have to consider it tummy.
So we say, it's something that Rabbanan make you.
This isn't something that Rabbanan, no. This is
the Rabbanan say.
The 40 saw the mikveh, is that right?
Yeah, but the Rabbanan say.
The Rabbanan say what?
But it's, we consider it as...
No, we're saying, based on the concept of, that we have a suffix over here, that we have a suffix tumor, and this is a different kind of suffix tumor. It's not even whether you touched the suffix, whether the mikveh was whole at the time, whether the mikveh was full at the time, but therefore we have to... So therefore, so by the same token, the Rabbanan would say in our Mishnah that no, you can't assume that the produce was intact up until you came and up until 24 hours or whatever before you came and found it missing. No, you would have to assume that as soon as you turned your eyes away from it, that it was gone. I think Moses chitted a chalukin. Well, okay, of course they're arguing. How would we think that we could reconcile them? The answer is now to tame a ma'ala mafreya mesles, because if you didn't have Rabbi Lazar, the Amora, telling us, you would think when the Chachamim say the mafreya in the case of the mikveh, they don't mean everything all the way back to the last time the mikveh was measured in Tomei Misafik. They would, maybe they would say, like Rabbi Elazar in our Mishnah, that anything that was Torah in the Mishnah in the last 24 hours is Tomei Masechet. But anything before that would be fine. So Mashmalan, that's really telling us that no, Rabbi Elazar might say that. The Chachamim would say that no, you have to go all the way back to the last time the Mishnah was measured, and only anything that was Torah up until there, up until then is Torah. Anything after that would be Tomei.
Argue.
So they would argue what?
With the
Meister as well, exactly. The Mishnah said, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Kibbutz Rakim, Chula, that there's three times a year you have to check the wine that you're setting aside for Truma. Tana, so he said the first one was when the east wind blows on Motzei Yom Tov, on Motzei Sukkos. Tana, we learn in a Braisa, the Kiddur Rosh HaMotzei Achal Shal Tzkufa. It actually means this has to be that the east wind is blowing at the end of Sukkos when it's doing Tzkufas Tishrei. Tzkufas Tishrei is the fall. Now, we know sometimes the Yom Tovim are early in the secular year, sometimes they're late. Sometimes it can happen that Sukkot takes place still during Tzkufas Tammuz, it's still during the summer. It's before the fall equinox. That's not what we're talking about over here. The east wind that we're talking about is that comes at the beginning of the fall. So therefore, if Sukkot is early that year, if Sukkot is at the end of September instead of sometime in October, as it is most years, then it wouldn't mean that this wind is blowing right away the last day after Sukkot on Yisru Chag. It would have to be a week or two later, however long it takes to be in the Tzkufa of Tishrei. Tosfos points out that usually in that case, you would think in that case there should have been an Ibur Yer. Tosfos says that actually that's only one factor that Beis Din would consider whether they're making an Ibur Yer. Whether the Tzkufa is going to be late. But that's not the only factor that would consider. They'd also consider the factor of how advanced, how much the grain has grown before Pesach, and then various other... Tanya, we learn in another price. Rabbi Hoda, Rabbi Gimel Prakim Meichon HaSatvur, there's three times a year when you sell produce, when you sell grain, Lifnei Azera, before the planting, over Shas Azera, and at the time of planting, over Price of Pesach, and in 2 weeks before Pesach. Price means a half, so 30 days before Pesach, you're supposed to start learning Hilchos HaChag. From Purim and on, Price of Pesach means half of that period, so from Rosh Chodesh Nissan. And over Shlosha Perakim Merchon at the Yayin, and there's three times a year when you sell wine, the Price of Pesach, right before, 2 weeks before Pesach, Rosh Chodesh Nissan, over Price of Pesach, 2 weeks before Atzeres, so roughly like Boimer, over Pesach Chag, and 2 weeks before Sukkot, so Rosh Hashanah. The Shemen Me'atzeres Ve'elach, and oil is to be sold from Shavuot's time and on. Now, L'mayitel Chizah, what's the relevance and halacha of all of these statements about when to sell? Amar Rava V'itemer Apapel Shutvin. It's relevant as far as when you have a partnership. Namely, so you have two people, so Rashi explains that you have two people who are partners in grain or wine or what have you. Outside of these times, if one partner wants to sell some of it, he has to get the other one to agree. During those times, during the 2 weeks before Pesach, or 2 weeks before, in the case of grain, during the time right before the planting, and during the time of planting, and 2 weeks before Pesach, during those periods, you can sell it unilaterally. Any other time of year, you want to sell it, you have to consult with your partner first.
Why can't you do it?
Because those are the normal times to sell. So those are the normal times to sell. If you sell it some other time and then later on the price goes up, then your partner has a valid claim, has a claim against you. What do you mean? You caused us a loss. Tosfos says differently. Tosfos says we're talking about that if you have two people who are partners and they decide, you know what, let's dissolve the partnership. Let's each take our half and dissolve the partnership. Tosfos learns that the Gemara is saying is that they can do that if one of them wants to do it and the other one objects. They can still do it during these times. If they want to do it any other time of year, both of them have to agree to dissolve the partnership. Again, similar idea, because these times of year are when the prices are fairly stable. Any other time, the prices may go up afterwards, and then what do you mean? We lost that. Okay. Mikan ve'elach mai, what happens after any of these times? Okay, in that case, any time is a valid time for it. Once you pass these times, for example, in the case of grain, once you pass the time before Pesach, during the summer, then that's it. All that time is considered a valid time to sell it. And the Iri actually says the other way around. It means that after that, you have to start getting permission from your partner again to sell it, because it's not considered the normal time. Now a little like that. The Mishnah told us about the east wind that blows at the end of Sukkot, which brings hot weather. It's the beginning of fall, but it brings anybody here who's been to Israel is familiar with the Chamsins, the hot east wind that blows sometimes. That's what we're going to talk about. One of the times during the year when they tend to come is after Sukkot. Yeah.
It
happens in Eretz Yisrael. We're talking after Sukkot, but sometimes they happen.
I think it's more after Pesach.
Yeah, okay, but here we're talking about one that starts comes at the beginning of the fall. Yeah. So, starting with the pasuk says in Yonah, it describes over there how after Yonah has after the people of Nineveh did tshuva, Yonah is very disappointed. What happened to my nevuah? He's sitting there on the side of the city waiting to see what's going to happen. The Abish sets up the Kitoyan plant to shelter him, and he's very happy about that. The next day, the Abish sends a worm that eats up the Kitoyan, and then he's exposed there to the heat. And then the pasuk says, "Vayik Yisrael Hashemesh." It happened when the sun rose. Vayiman avatim ruach kodem charishis. The Eibishter appointed. The Eibishter set up an east wind charishis. My charishis.
It means the wind blowing.
It means from the east. Yeah. So my charishis. What does charishis mean? Amar Rav Yehuda, v'shah shemen asheves oisa tzlomim tzlomim bayam. It's the kind of wind which is so strong that when it blows, it makes furrows upon furrows in the ocean. It makes high waves, in other words. So charishis, that would be meloshin chorish, meloshin plowing. Because it makes it look as though the water has been plowed up. If that's how you're explaining it, how do you explain the pasuk continues? The sun beat down on Yonah's head and he fainted from the heat. If you're saying that it's a strong wind, what does that have to do with anything? The point the pasuk is trying to make is that it was very hot and Yonah was uncomfortable. What is the fact that it's a strong wind have anything to do with that? In fact, other mepharshim point out the Gemara's question is also a strong wind like that would help cool him off. Ella, Amar Rabba, the kind of wind, the shashim and asheves, that when it blows, mashtekes kol aruchis mepaneu, it quiets down all the wind because it's so powerful. So we're not talking about the wind speed. We're not talking about the wind speed. We're talking about the power of it. That all you feel is that wind. You don't feel anything else. You can't feel wind from any other direction. So in that case, charishis is meloshin cheresh, like death, like it deafens, it silences all the other winds. And in that case, that's why it was a hot wind, so therefore he was very uncomfortable. There's no other wind from any other side to moderate it. The Heiner Dechziv, and this is like what the pasuk says in Iyov, Asher v'gadecha chamin v'hashkek eretz mitarim, that your clothes are hot when the earth is silenced from the south, which means, Amar Rav Chalifa bar Rav Chista, Amar Rav Chista, emasad v'gadecha chamin, at what point are your clothes hot and you feel uncomfortable, v'shor shehishkit eretz mitarim, when the world is quiet from the south, which means, Rashi says, a wind from the south is a cool wind. So usually when that blows, you feel comfortable. Like this, when that wind is stopped, by instead there's a strong east wind coming, then therefore you feel hot and uncomfortable.
The south wind is a cool wind.
So the Gemara tells a story about a discussion about these winds. Rav Huna and Rav Chista Abu Yasvi, one time Rav Huna and Rav Chista were sitting together, and Gniva passed by them. We learned in the first parak that Gniva was a Tamid Chacham, but he was also a Baal Machloikas. There was a whole thing where he was harassing Marukva, and Marukva had to ask the Shaila whether I can master him to the government, and Rav Elazar told him, don't, wait it out, and the Eibishter will take care of him for you. So, so one of them, Rav Huna and Rav Chista, one says to the other, Nekum Mekamela, stand up in his honor. Debar Urien, who is a Talmud Chacham. Amalei Yiduch, the other one says, Mekamela Pal Gaw Nekum, should we stand up in front of somebody with a Baal Meriva, with a Baal Machloikas? You don't give such person honor. Adahachi, as they're discussing this, also Ula Gabayu, he came closer to them. Amalei Umayashkitu, he asked them, what are you guys talking about? The Marsha says he assumed that they would have stood up for him, except they must be partisan in learning. It shows a little bit what a Baal Gaiva he was. He figured that for sure they would be standing up for me, except they must be partisan in learning. Amulet Beruchos. So they told him, we're talking about the winds. An interesting thing. They weren't talking about the winds. They were talking about whether to stand up for him. So the Sam Sofer says actually they were. So they were talking about the wind. They were talking about the windy Gaiva that he has. Other before there's another. No, but they were talking about whether they should be standing up in front of him, whether it's proper to honor a Baal Gaiva like that. But it's a matter of halacha. It's a discussion in halacha actually about it. And this is another interesting explanation that I saw, that the ruchos they're talking about is the ruach hamakom neichaymenu and ruach habriyas neichaymenu. The ruach habriyas is not neichaymenu. People don't get along with you either with the way you're harassing ma'ufa. The Eibishter's ruach is not too happy with you either. That's the ruchos we're talking about. He thought they meant ruchos as in wind. So amar lahu hachi amar of chanan bar rava amar rab dalad ruchos menashvis b'choyim. There's four winds that blow every day. Rashi explains in Brachas that each quarter of the day, the wind blows from a different direction. The north wind always blows together with all of them. The north wind, Rashi says, is a gentle wind. It's not too hot, it's not too cold. So it helps moderate the effects of the other winds. We're not talking about in North America. We're talking about in Israel. Or Bohel, maybe. If it weren't for that, the world wouldn't even be able to last for a moment. Because, again, this north wind helps moderate things. All the other ones are all too intense. The ruach joim is kashim ikulon, and the south wind is the harshest of all of them. The mullet, ben netz ma'amida, if it weren't for ben netz, it actually says a malach. Netz actually means a hawk. So it's a malach who has the shape of a hawk, who holds it back. It would destroy the whole world, because as Rashi said before, that the south wind is a cold wind. Tosfos brings from the Aruch over here that actually the south wind is also a harsh wind, that like we were talking about the east wind before. So therefore, it's also the idea that if it were blowing too much, it would destroy the world. It would make it impossible to live. Nema, as the pasuk says, the Eibishter says to Yehud, "Hamibinos to Yehaver Nate." Yifers knuff of Lateimon. Is it from your understanding that the nate gets wings and then gets feathers and spreads out its wings towards the south? So we see that the net is associated with the south. So that's what we're saying, that this ben net, this malach called ben net, is associated with holding back the south wind. There's Jerushim that the various Mephoshim talk about, the idea that what these four winds and the ben nets represent, among other things, is that the four winds represent four different midos rois, of which the south wind, the ben yoyada talks about this, the south wind represents Bali Lashon Hara, and therefore the ben nets represents the tzaddik. The Gemara explains in the Gemara creates an association in the Sefer Shabbos between the letters nun for Neman and the letter tzaddik, as in tzaddik, and tzaddikim, and therefore the tzaddik can help hold back the worst effects of the Bali Lashon Hara. We'll leave the rest of this discussion about the winds and about the weather for tomorrow. That's the